Today I'd like to talk about Zen and appreciation. So one of the our features, the way we are programmed, is that we easily become habituated. So whenever we have an experience, you know, initially we might really enjoy something, and then after a while, often not very long, we sort of kind of get used to it, and there's less and less excitement or joy about that experience or the possession. And many years ago, there was a study done where they played a bell like we have here repeatedly, so slowly again and again. And they measured people's physiological reaction to the sound. And some of the people were doing what's called concentration meditation, so they absorbed. And so when the bell rang, there wasn't much of a response. It was almost like the sound wasn't really, they didn't really respond to the sound. They had other people who weren't trained in meditation, and what they found is the first sound, there was quite a strong response, the next sound as well, third sound less so, and then maybe after six or seven sounds, there was very little response. So that's kind of what we're used to. And then they had people who were doing Zen meditation, and every time the bell rang, there was exactly the same response. So the bell rang, response, bell, response. So in Zen, we call that beginner's mind. We also have something called the negativity bias. So we're actually hardwired to really notice and remember negative experiences, and are far less likely to remember positive experiences. So Jack Kornfield, who's a very well-known meditation teacher, gives this story of, you know, you're doing your Christmas shopping and the shops are really crowded, and, you know, everyone's quite stressed, and you go to 9 different shops and you're actually quite demanding and the shop assistants are really busy, but one shop after the other, they're really patient with you, very polite, courteous, really go out of the way to help you. And then you go to shop number 10 and the shop assistant is a little bit short with you, what you consider to be a little bit rude. So what do? You go home and say, you wouldn't believe what happened to me. Oh my goodness, it was so rude to me. Where do they get these people from? Like, you know, what's happening to our world today? So all you remember is that one negative one, and you've completely forgotten about the 9 who are actually very patient with you. And we have more pain receptors than pleasure receptors. It takes longer for pleasurable experience to sort of become something that we remember, to even be noticed and absorbed by the brain, whereas a negative experience, they call it like a super highway, goes straight to the hippocampus, and we form little baby neurons to be fearful and remember that experience for next time. So what they talk about in neuroscience is like we're Velcro for negative experiences, so that we attract them and cling onto them, and Teflon for positive, so they can even bypass us. And it actually takes a little bit more effort and mindfulness to really actually become conscious of them. So when we look at the Four Noble Truths, so the first one that the Buddha taught, so the first one is that life is dukkha, which is sometimes translated as life is suffering, but perhaps more accurate might be the unsatisfactory nature of existence. So, you know, that even there might be some pleasure, it's going to pass, we love people, they're going to die, we're going to die, you know, so that unsatisfactory nature of existence. And then the second noble truth was, and this dukkha is called greed, hatred, ignorance. And so sometimes this greed is described as grasping, hatred as aversion, and then ignorance is not really understanding how things work. So, yeah, when we look at those three, and then the third noble truth is that there's a way out of that, and that fourth is that the Eightfold Noble Path, which we've talked about. So Paul Gilbert is a clinical professor of clinical psychology, and he's done a lot of work on compassion-focused therapy and also compassionate mind training. He's written a lot of books, one called Mind for Compassion. And he's very strongly influenced by Buddhism. As far as I'm aware, he's not actually practicing Buddhist, but he's very interested by Buddhist psychology. And he sort of developed a model which I find really helpful when we think about all of this, called the three emotional systems. And so the first emotional system is fight flight, which is our defensive system, which we are all familiar with. And basically that's, you know, hardwired into us. So when we are confronted by danger, we have a very strong response to either fight the danger or run away really fast. And there's also a freeze component to that system as well, where everything just sort of shuts down from being overwhelmed. But the fight-flight system is very powerful. So it activates huge resources in our bodies, in our mind. It releases cortisol and other stress hormones. The heart beats very fast. The breathing is fast. All the energy goes to the big muscle groups. Digestion slows down. So it's a really, it's meant to be a very short-term response to an immediate danger. But unfortunately, in our modern lifestyle, we often get activated into fight-flight by what's called paper tiger. So not a real tiger in front of us, but more things in our imagination. So that could be things like you get a big power bill you weren't expecting, management sends an email, we're having another restructure, bushfires, you know, earthquakes, neighbors yelling, whatever. So it's quite easily activated. And it's very much about not keeping safe. So you don't want to become lunch for someone else, like the tiger. So that's sort of the idea with fight flight. And one of the things that happens with that is the frontal lobe goes offline, so we become very reactive. From the limbic system, very reactive. So the second system he talks about is resource seeking. So that's about getting enough resources to be able to thrive and flourish and survive. So the first one is very much about immediate survival. If you don't get the first one right, then you might be, you know, you might even not be alive. But the second one is also survival based, not as immediate, but if you don't have enough food, if you don't have shelter, you know, if you don't have good health cover, things like that, then things can quickly start to deteriorate for you. And we know about the social determinants of health, so how healthy we are has much, you know, has also to do with the social environment we're in, whether we have enough resources. And in a country like Australia, you know, we sort of like to think everyone has the resources they need, but unfortunately there are quite a few people who are marginalized for various reasons. And for instance, shelter, you know, not everyone has adequate shelter, partly sometimes things like bushfires, floods, rental prices, things like that, mental illness, people living on the streets. And last Monday, we actually had the anniversary of the National Apology, and one of the announcements was millions of dollars for clean drinking water for remote communities. So we still have communities in Australia who don't actually have access to something as basic as clean drinking water. So this resource-seeking system is what sort of gets us up in the morning, working hard, and it's a great system. So the thing with this model is not like one system is the right and the other ones are bad, but it's about getting the balance. So it gets us in the morning, you know, a lot of achievements are based in that system. It has a little inbuilt reward system for us, which is dopamine. And so every time we achieve something, we get a little dopamine hit, which is like a little sugar hit. So, you know, someone says, well done, and you go ding, and you get a new car, and you go ding, and you get lots of likes on Facebook, and you get another ding. So that's all very good. But that system, if you put too much energy just into that system, it can become quite addictive. So that sense of it's never enough. It's also very reliant on external factors. So, relying on people liking you, giving you work, that things are going well. It's not so useful when things aren't going the way you want them to, like illness happens or you lose your job or suddenly you're not it anymore, you know, for celebrities. One day they're everywhere and suddenly next day they're not popular anymore. So, yeah, the system has its use, but it also has its sort of weaknesses, I guess, as well, if you put a lot of energy into that. And then we have, so those two systems are basically survival-based. And then the third system is what he calls the soothing and affiliation system. which is basically where we activate the parasympathetic nervous system, which is resting, regenerating. And that system is very important for social relationships, for healing, for spirituality, for feeling a connection with ourselves, with people around us, with nature. Appreciation, so the title of the talk, happens in that system, gratitude, and also contentment. And contentment, of course, is a lot more grounded than excitement. So the first system, some of the emotions, fight, flight might be fear, but also anger. Anger is a protective emotion. The second system, there might be excitement, achievement, you know, which is good as well. The third system is more about gratitude, appreciation, and contentment. So the third system, the soothing and affiliation, you know, if you sort of want a life like for us practicing Zen, we probably think those values or those qualities of the third system are really important. That's something that we want more. It's a lot more quiet. There's a lot more or less excitement in the system. And another key point is it's not as crucial for survival. So we can actually get by without spending a lot of time connecting with the soothing and affiliation system. So what can happen in our day-to-day life is that there's a lot of things happening at once. And anything which is slightly threatening reminds you of a threat, or which seems like a really good opportunity that you can't miss, that's where your attention is going to go very quickly. And so we can actually, you know, if you don't have a regular practice to sort of balance the systems out, it can easily be that you go through a whole day and the next day and the next day again, and you constantly, oh, look at that. Oh, dear, that's a bit concerning there. And, you're basically going with the greed and hatred part of the Second Noble Truth, spending a lot of time there. And so then that's not very balanced. Another thing about that third system, it doesn't feed capitalism. So there's also external societal pressures not to spend too much time feeling contented. There's not much marketing in contentment. So it's not actually easy for physiological reasons, for the way we're hardwired in our minds, and for the way that a lot of society around us works as well, to really have that sense of dropping into that third system again and again. And that's really why all religions have practices which say this third system is also important. You need to take time out. You need to come together. You need to drop things that are outcome-based, achievement-based. Just come back to actually what matters. And so we have rituals. We have days where communities come. We might have, you know, dancing all night, or we might have stopping five times a day for contemplation. The Jewish Sabbath is another example, you know, where you drop achieving and you just come together with family. So it's kind of societies have known in a way that this needs a sort of structure and form to actually, so we actually pay attention to it. And so when it comes to our Zen practice, we have a lot of structure and form. Sometimes it can feel a little bit, why do we have to do this way and that way? And in one way, it's like no particular reason, but in another way, it just helps to generate the structure where we all come together as a community and we actually say, third system is also important and we're going to spend some time together as a group being, you know, cultivating that soothing and affiliation system as well. So if we look at greed, you know, that could be the resource-seeking system, that grasping sort of idea. And then aversion could be fight, flight. So that sense of, you know, either I want to get away from that or I want to get rid of it. And then ignorance, if you look at greed, hatred and ignorance could be maybe not really understanding where happiness comes from, sort of basing it too much on external factors and not understanding what the quality of contentment can look like, but also what might be required every day in our life to cultivate that contentment, because it's so easy to get pulled away from it. So what do we actually need in our day-to-day life as part of our practice to consciously cultivate that third system? And so coming back to the bells, it's kind of that sense of, you know, we are easily habituated to things that we actually have already. So we have resources, we are all of us here, I imagine, in this room, over-resourced, not under-resourced. But it's quite easy to stop appreciating some of the things that we already have. And so in Zen, it's kind of that same, you know, something is there and we can keep having a fresh approach to it and go, ah, here we are. I can appreciate this. I can appreciate that this is part of my life. And that also then, of course, counteracts that negativity bias, which again is very strong. So we can sort of make time and space to say, you know, actually, this is what I do have. And this is not getting away from suffering, which is also real. And even though, you know, we have fairly privileged lives, we all have real suffering as well. So it's not a Pollyanna, you know, isn't it all wonderful? So it's more finding a balance. But just knowing that the natural tendency is more towards the negative, so we can actually counteract that by having that sense of the beginner's mind and an openness to experience rather than that habituation. So contentment might look like an appreciation of what we have. So instead of saying, so now let me see, what else do I need so I can be happy? What else needs to be gone so that I can be happy? We can actually ask ourselves, what do I already have that I can value and that I can appreciate?